primary care knowledge boost, non-clinical passports, cultivating non-clinical expertise in general practice. Hello and welcome back to Primary Care Knowledge Boost. Today we have a slightly different episode for you. We've got some lovely people, Sati Boyes, who's a programme manager in Greater Manchester, and Lorna Laughlin, who is a previous practice manager, but now who works for GP Excellence. And we decided to talk to them about a kind of project that's happening in Greater Manchester about making something called non-clinical workforce passports.
Yeah, so this episode is all about how to cultivate non-clinical workforce in terms of a new platform that Sati's been really crucial in making and implementing, where they've termed it non-clinical workforce passports. And it's a place, it's a platform where you can see loads of different types of learning and career progression for non-clinical workforce staff, which is her massive passion, around trying to get parity of esteem and trying to help recruit, retain and progress the careers of our amazing non-clinical staff. With that in mind, the episode's really good for practice managers, partners, anyone who's interested, and our non-clinical staff out there. So huge shout out to you guys who make up, as Sati mentions, the majority of the workforce in general practice. Hopefully you'll enjoy this episode.
Yeah, 100%. It's nice to be able to provide an episode that's for our non-clinical colleagues as well, specifically. And I guess even if you're not in Greater Manchester, it's a nice episode just to hear about some of the work that's going on elsewhere, and maybe being able to take some of this back to your local patch and see how you can support your non-clinical colleagues as well.
So, would you like to introduce yourselves and tell us all about your current roles?
Yeah, so I'm Sati. I work in Salford locality. I work for NHSGM. But I've become involved in this programme because I've been programme managing a piece of work that's been aiming to really focus on the recruitment and retention of the non-clinical workforce across Greater Manchester.
Excellent. A noble pursuit. And Lorna?
Yeah, so I'm Lorna. I work for the GMPCB on a programme called GP Excellence, and I'm a practice manager by background.
Brilliant. Lovely. So it's great to have you here and to provide slightly different perspectives on this whole episode that we're going to be talking about. Can you tell us, first of all, what the non-clinical passports are and how they came about?
Okay, so if I make a start, and then Lorna will probably have some things to add. So in terms of passports across GM, it first started around COVID times, actually. So there was a need to develop some kind of training and development around people being able to vaccinate in terms of giving the vaccinations for COVID. And they needed to have that in a portable way where the standard of training was obviously robust and evidenced, so that people could move around the system and vaccinate in various different places. So a passport for moving around seemed a good thing to call it. And that was the first passport that was developed. And once that had been developed, the concept broadened to things like passports around nursing, diabetes, workforce banks, and a lot of this was around clinical staff. So when we started the non-clinical workforce programme, we thought there was an opportunity to perhaps develop something around the non-clinical workforce as well.
A very good idea. So then what exactly are they?
So it's a digital platform and it brings together a foundation standard of training. We've got a pathway that we've defined that takes you right through from somebody who's a trainee all the way up to practice manager or even a partner working in a practice. And we've created a set of standardised job descriptions that define the roles around each of these different parts of the pathway. And then we've developed some core training that attaches to either an entry-level role, an intermediate role, or some of the more advanced roles. We've then got a section around additional resources that people might find useful that's quite extensive, and we've had some really good feedback on that.
And can I just ask, whenever we're referring to non-clinical, what roles in primary care are we talking about?
So at the moment, I think the passport really focuses on non-clinical staff working in general practice. However, a lot of the courses and the development opportunities that are attached to the passport would be transferable across the four disciplines. So it's something that, you know, other disciplines may want to make use of in the future. And if they do, you know, you can contact us about that. But at the minute, we've developed it around general practice.
Aha. So other primary care areas like pharmacy or dentistry or things. So, yeah, at the moment, it's general practice focused. But yeah.
So there is a plan in the next phase to look at broadening it out so that it includes all of those other primary care disciplines. So that's kind of like the next phase that we're going to move on to.
And sorry, I'm just asking lots of questions because I've not actually had a conversation about this before. So
that's useful, actually. Yeah, it's good to come in without knowing much. Yeah.
So in terms of who we're expecting to use or want to use these non-clinical passports in general practice, is it people such as reception and admin staff and practice managers? Is that who it's aimed at being used for?
Yeah, so absolutely. So it's from people coming new into an entry-level role. So that might be reception or admin, up to things like senior practice managers, practice managers, partners. So it's a progressive pathway. The other thing that we incorporated, because there was an opportunity to do this, was all of the personalised care support roles. So some of those roles have been incorporated as well.
Oh, yeah, that definitely makes sense.
Just to kind of throw another spanner in the works, actually, with a sort of unscripted question, but one you'll be well able for. Why have you developed it? What's the advantage of the non-clinical staff having access to this and using it?
I think from my point of view, I have a real passion for developing something for this workforce. As a clinician by background, I think you take it for granted that there is a lot of training, there are a lot of resources, there are career progression pathways that are there. And when you see the number of, so the largest workforce we have in primary care is our non-clinical workforce, yet in terms of giving them equity in terms of access to training and career progression, I think they probably have had the least attention in the past. So for me, this has been a passion to develop something that provides some parity of esteem and some equity for this staff group. So I think that's really from my perspective. I think Lorna would probably have some thoughts.
So obviously I agree with all of that. I do think that, you know, often non-clinical staff feel neglected, whether or not that's the case. And having something developed for them like this, that does show that there is career progression, that if you're coming into the NHS, into general practice, into any of the other disciplines, at the starting point, that, you know, there are steps that you can take to develop within that without having to look outside of that organisation, which is great from a retention point of view, because, you know, we do want to invest in our staff. There's an awful lot of training that goes on for non-clinical staff that is informal and is delivered in-house, and there's no actual recognition for what that is. But alongside that, there's that underpinning knowledge and formal training that can be acquired, and actually having access to that and seeing what is available is a useful tool, not just for the trainee themselves, but also for the managers, for the partners of the practice, to see what is available for non-clinical staff to help them with their own career progression, with professional development, and to look at ways that if you've identified that someone has got, you know, the skills or the interest to develop further, you know, what opportunities are there, what options are there in terms of training. So to be able to get that from one place is a really useful tool for anybody who's trying to think of things from a retention perspective, or just to make sure that, you know, the training and the standardisation of training across the organisation, you know, it is of a really high standard and comparable to what else is being offered in the NHS. Because again, quite often general practice, independent contractors, you know, smaller organisations, it hasn't been there in the same way that it maybe is if you work in an acute trust or, you know, in a larger provider.
I think as well, if you take it to a broader level and you think about the pipeline into health and social care more broadly, we've got massive retention problems across the piece. And so there was an anecdote that one of our GPs shared with us about somebody who actually came to them on a Kickstart program who would have been an ideal candidate for a passport had it had been developed at the time. And they said, oh, no, we lost this individual. They left the practice. But actually what they did was they developed confidence in skills and they went on to train to be a paramedic. That's not a, you know, a loss. That's an incredibly powerful story. There are people out there with a mixture of talent and skills. And if we can open up pathways and career progression, it makes us able to retain people in our health and social care system. So it has a wider impact.
Yeah, it looks at what's out there and connects it to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's about that kind of aggregation. I think you're right. The what you said, Sati, I think we do take it for granted on the clinical side that all of the kind of pathways and training are kind of just there in front of us. And sometimes we almost look at it negatively, that it's like a conveyor belt and there's like a pathway across. But when you look at it from the point of view of our non-clinical staff, I can see how kind of afloat they may feel, not really knowing where to go or how to access any of that progression and training. So it definitely sounds like a great idea. Just thinking logistically then, so if you've got somebody out there who's potentially listening today to this episode and is interested, what how would they start on this journey of the passport?
Well, interestingly, Lorna and I had a chat yesterday before this podcast, and we Googled GM non-clinical workforce passport. There you go. All the information comes up for you. So it's actually incredibly easy. So if you put that into your search engine, you'll come to a landing page that gives you all the information about the passport. It gives a promotional video that talks you through how to use it, how to create an account, how to log in. Everything is there. So it's incredibly easy to access.
So is it literally anyone who's got a job in general practice in a non-clinical role that can log in and do it?
Yes, anyone can create an account. So I was just looking at the initial data yesterday, and we have some individuals who work for the voluntary sector that have registered for a passport as well. So it isn't kind of organisation specific. So we've got federations, we've got people who work in an ICS that have registered, so it's accessible. And that was the aim, really, that we weren't going to be prescriptive about who could use it. It's about a tool that's there for people to use to meet their needs without us prescribing what that should be.
And is it restricted to Greater Manchester in any way, or can people from across the country just access and sign up?
So at the moment, the passport is set up. So when you register the About You section, it attaches you to a locality, a PCN and a practice, and gets information on your manager and that kind of thing. So at the moment, it would be set up for GM.
That's perfect. Just in case there are listeners from across the country that start Googling this and trying to log into your system, just I'm wondering. But anybody out there who is listening, it sounds like a fantastic idea. Maybe you need to set it up in your local area.
Talk us through some examples, if you will. So say like you're a new, so we've recently taken on a receptionist. Actually, it was quite a long time ago now, but I don't think she has access to this or has heard about it. What kind of things would you expect her to do? So once she's logged on, what will she then see, or what kind of things could she look through to see what's available?
So as Sati said, the training opportunities that you can register for or sign up for are split into kind of an intermediate, beginner, or, you know, an advanced level. However, you can see all of them. So if you're interested in, you know, where might my career take me, what kind of interest do I have, there's a wealth of information. It's a tool to be able to pull lots of different training opportunities together. Some of it is e-learning, some of it might not be, but you can click through all the different opportunities and think, right, well, what interests me? What do I want to learn more about? So there's the typical statutory and mandatory type training. But then there's also other things that are enhancements to maybe the role that your new receptionist is doing. So there'll be opportunities around, say, care navigation, there'll be chaperoning, there'll be communication skills. There's, off the top of my head, there's so many different things that you could click through and you could find. We've tried to think about what would be relevant to people within these roles and put those so they're easily accessible. Clearly, there might be other things you want to do that aren't sitting there on the passport at the moment, but that doesn't mean to say that you will see something and think, oh, well, actually, I'm a bit interested in that, but is there anything else? And if you find it yourself and you sign up for something, you can bring that into your passport. So whilst there are some things linked directly to it, you can always, if you do a course in a different way or you're sent on, you know, a different type of training, either face-to-face or something within your own locality, and you get a certificate, then you upload that into your passport. So you start to develop this portfolio for yourself that you can share with your manager and show them what you're interested in. It's a really good tool for appraisal, but you may equally be thinking, well, I'm not quite sure which one, you know, I know the job I'm doing at the moment, but what do I have an interest in? So, you know, we know sometimes receptionists decide, well, I'd quite like to move into a healthcare assistant type role, or we're going to phlebotomy. And, you know, there's opportunity to link, I'm sure Sat will explain, to link passports together so you can start to build your own your own passports of things that would be interesting to you in your own professional development. But certainly as a starting point, if you'd no idea what training is likely to help you within your role, then there'll be a lot of information available and a lot of courses, different durations, different lengths, different commitments in terms of time that you'll be able to start to work through and look at and think, well, do I want to do this? Is this of interest to me?
What about something occurred to me about, say, like you were interested and there was a few things on there that you were quite keen on. Is that sort of an individual basis, like general practices, in terms of like, oh, I'm interested in this. How might people get funding or time off or things like that?
So most of the things that we've put on the passport so far are free for the user. I think
we've signposted to some of the Northwest Leadership Academy leadership courses for some of the more advanced roles, so they would obviously have funding implications, but there's an awful lot of stuff on there that you just click through and it takes you to free e-learning.
So you can go on and have a look at it. Now, your receptionist might go on there and think, actually, there's 50 courses available to me here. Great, I'm going to start working through them. That doesn't mean as a practice that you need to support all that time or you need to, you know, pay them for that time back. The idea behind the passport is that it's for that learner to be able to work through in a way that they choose to. So it doesn't all fall back as that's there and they have to do all of it and the practice is going to reimburse the time spent on it. But there will be certain elements that the practice does want them to do, you know, which you'll have your own arrangement in terms of your statutory and mandatory training, for example. It can all link in there. Or you may decide in appraisal to talk to them and say, well, would you, you know, which areas are you interested in? How do you want to develop over the next 12 months? And you'll agree between you, actually, yeah, I think this would be a good course for you. Why don't you go on and do that? You can look at it together and agree how you're going to work with them to either give them some of the time back or not, depending on, you know, your own circumstances. But it's just, we didn't want to limit the options available.
And I think it's important to say it's completely optional. It's not a mandatory tool. So the ethos behind it is to try and promote the non-clinical workforce in terms of giving them some equality in terms of what they can access, but also trying to promote a foundation standard. So rather than having lots of job descriptions and lots of different competencies, trying to build a framework, just as we have in all the other careers that you have access in health and care. But it isn't mandatory, so people don't have to do every course. What we really want to see is, because it was only hard launched on the 8th of January, if we can get feedback, this is not a tool for me and Lorna. This is a tool that we've tried to put in place that will grow and develop, but the workforce that are using it will shape it with the feedback that they give so that it's their tool, not ours. And that's really what we feel is really important with this, that feedback will shape how it develops in the future.
Lovely. Well, we'll leave links to how to feedback. I'm sure there's stuff on the actual passport, but yeah, we'll put as many links as we can on the episode as well.
How would you guys like to see the project developing? I know it's quite new, if it's only launched at the start of January, but have you got any thoughts about where you'd like to see it go?
So when I was talking earlier, I was saying about it starting with the COVID passport. We're in a situation where we've, as a GM system, we've developed a number of passports, but we've developed them perhaps in almost a siloed way. And we need to, the next piece of work that we're going to do is to take stock, because there's a lot of good stuff across all of these passports. And what we'd like to move towards is, rather than having kind of 10, 11 passports that we've got at the minute, we have a GM passport, that you can almost pick a mix and build your own profile of the things that you want to do, because there's commonality in each of these passports. So we want to perhaps restructure it so that it becomes more of an accessible tool to more people across GM, and it isn't necessarily here's a clinical passport, here's a non-clinical passport. So that's the vision, and that's kind of the next stage with it. But I think crucially is to get feedback from the staff that are using this part of the passport so that can shape the future of how it looks in GM.
Fabulous. So I think, yeah, we'll like I said, we'll put all the links in, so we'll make sure that everyone's got details of how to look this up further. But so I think the last thing to ask you is just about take home messages from our chat today. Anything that you'd like to sort of thoughts that you'd like to leave the audience listening with, essentially a little bit of a summary.
So I would say this is a free tool that is hopefully going to be useful for the person who has the passport, but also useful for the manager who is responsible for retaining that member of staff in their team. Now, we have tools in general practice at the moment, and you might be listening to this and thinking, well, you know, we've already got one that works really well. It's a repository of all everybody's training certificates. Why would we want to change it? You may not want to, for starters. As Sati said, it isn't mandatory. You don't have to move. But if you do choose to move to the passport, it's going to be free. And that is, at the moment, we're all struggling in general practice, certainly, from a financial point of view. So even if you're not paying for that yourself at the moment, which, it might be your ICS is paying for this, or your PCN, or you're getting the funding from somewhere else, that funding isn't guaranteed to stay with you. And, so you might be using a tool at the moment that, there is a cost somewhere along with that. This one is going to be free for you to use. The same training will be available on that you have access to on most of these other platforms. So we're not saying we're better, but certainly, we're comparable. So if you want to check it out from a manager's point of view, that's a carrot for you to have a look at. What it also does, it empowers the trainee to be able to take ownership of their own professional development. It's not a tool that the manager is imposing on you. This is a passport for you, for your own professional development that you retain. That if you work within your PCN and you go to work in a different practice, or you have a part-time role in one and you want to work somewhere else in a similar or different type of role, you still have access to that passport. So, for the learner, it's a good opportunity. The statutory and mandatory training can be linked, so your manager can see that. They get prompts, if you're due for your training, and you can have nice reminders about that. But equally, there are areas of that you can share with your manager if you want to. I'd always encourage you to share what you're looking to do professionally with your manager. Hopefully they'll support you in your aspirations. But you can see all the different opportunities that are available to you, either in general practice or wider within the health and social care system. So from a career progression point of view, it doesn't limit you. You can see what else is out there. You can see what opportunities are available to you. And I think it's certainly worth having a look at and see if, it's something that you want to make the move to. And if you already do have your certificate somewhere else, then we can upload them easily, onto the new passport. You don't lose them. You don't need to redo that training if you've done it within the last 12 months or 2 years, whatever the requirement is. So it's easy to port onto this new system.
I think the key message for me would be that this is a tool, and it's a piece of work and a program of work that has entirely been shaped by practice managers and people working in general practice. So this isn't something that I've sat in a room as a program manager and developed. All I've really done is kind of hold the glue together to put the people together. And I think this is a real opportunity for this workforce to take the starting point that we've given and to shape it into something that really helps them to continue to give their profession a voice, really, in primary care and across GM for the future.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much for talking to us. I think it's a really clear and interesting message. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see where this goes and the feedback that you get. Yeah, fabulous. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
All right, so it's a little bit later on in the day. You've travelled back from meeting Sati and Lorna. What are your reflections after our chat with them?
Yeah, it was really nice meeting them face to face. They're both extremely passionate and really excellent, clearly bright minds in the right place. So we'd had a Zoom meeting before, but it's always just such a nicer experience face to face. So it was lovely saying hello and properly speaking to each other. And yeah, just getting a better idea about what they're doing and the real passion behind it and how well it's being received as well. Because like they were sort of explaining that this is, you know, it's a project where it's a platform for non-clinical workforce that's designed by practice managers and users. And it's being, the idea is very much from their perspective. And now that some of the other platforms that might be more sort of top down are starting to charge individual practices, it's great that it's here as an option, and it feels like a really potentially useful thing for non-clinical staff to tap into.
Yeah, definitely. To be fair, I had no real concept before coming into this, because you'd done most of the organizing on this one, so it's quite nice to come in fresh. And not really have a clue what we were going to be talking about. My reflection is just that it's useful to be able for those members of staff to be able to log in, almost like our portfolios, to be fair. Yeah. It's like having a place to be able to record our work, but like in addition to the portfolio, you can also access training on the same platform that can feed in and also be able to access information about how to progress your career, all kind of in one place. So I can see where the use is definitely there. And then about how you can then use that to have discussions about like your appraisal discussion with your manager and things. It just provides that framework that we take for granted that we have in our kind of clinical side. And it's nice that that's finally being done for the non-clinical staff as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we hope you enjoy the episode. And if you've got any queries or concerns, you know where we are. We've always leave our information to contact us or any links to things that we've mentioned on the episode description. So please get in touch if you'd like, and give us some feedback. Let us know how you've got on with it, or if you've got any queries, we'll field them over to Sati and Lorna. Till next time
on Primary Care Knowledge Boost.
This podcast has been able to continue to date due to the support of GP Excellence, Greater Manchester Integrated Care, and the Greater Manchester Training Hub.
Just a friendly reminder that these podcasts are for healthcare professional education and shouldn't be used for medical advice by the general public.
This episode was recorded in Greater Manchester in 2024. Guidelines can vary by location as well as over time, so always check for up-to-date local and national guidelines before making treatment decisions.
The content is based on our interviewees' opinion and interpretation of current best practice. It's your responsibility to use your clinical judgment before applying or relying on information solely from this podcast.
Check out the episode description for full details and any links we may have mentioned in the episode.